flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
There's one thing that will forever change the way you sleep, and it's the softest, 100% organic cotton bedding from Bull & Branch. You'll fall asleep faster, wrapped in the most luxurious comfort. You'll never sleep hot again with airy blankets, cloud-like duvets, and breathable sheets. You'll experience pure comfort on night one and feel your bedding get softer with every wash. Discover the difference with 15% off your first order at bullandbranch.com with code Odyssey. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Open all the doors and let you out.
So when we were at Hooters today, I asked Wheeler if he would do a daily sports rant because he has so much sports inside him to get out.
Yeah.
And he said, on one condition, this is my theme song.
Oh, God, no.
So every day at 3 p.m., semi-sonic into Kevin.
You don't understand. This actually causes me physical pain. Like, I don't feel shots. They need more anesthesia to put me out. But damn it, this song hurts.
Just gets all over that nerve, huh?
On all of the nerves.
Can you sum it up? What is it about it?
I don't know. I think it's the singers. I don't know. It's not like the rhythms of the guitar or anything like that. I don't know. It just feels like whining.
Mm. There's a lot of whining in the 90s.
I know. That's why I was into
the windies.
Like after grunge had a little of that in some ways, but it was more angst than whining.
Yeah.
But that's when nu metal came around. I'm like, "All right, that's my language." I don't like the whole
want to take me home.
But he knows he wants to take him home.
Oh no, this place is closing and I have to go home.
Well, when you sum it up that way.
I know it's not about that. I've had more than enough people explain to me whatever. I'm like, I don't care. It doesn't help.
No, there's no bringing you back.
Not on that. I mean, again, every one of you has a song and you hear it and you're like,
UB40, Red, Red Wine.
There you go. See? We all have it.
Yeah.
And it's a song that lots of other people like.
That
and that's
song could
totally
be about
cool.
me and I would still hate it.
Rach, do you have that?
Oh,
you
got
to have a song. Andrew, you have to have a song. It's like,
yeah,
turn it off.
I can't think of a specific one, but I definitely have ones where I'm like, no.
I have an artist.
A lot of Katy Perry songs. I'm not a big Katy
Perry
fan.
I don't like Pumped Up Kicks, that song that was everywhere.
Yeah, well, there's good reason not to
like
that.
I also don't like Somebody That I Used to Know.
Oh,
the
by
song.
Yeah.
I don't like that one either.
Yeah.
This will piss a lot of people off because a lot of people love him, but I can't listen to more than 3 seconds of Neil Diamond.
No.
He just threw up in his mouth.
What was that?
I don't judge anyone, just not for me.
Got a sports rant in you?
Oh, I got lots of them. Let's see. Let's do this baseball one, because I saw this today that they have released the estimation for the revenues that Major League Baseball made in 2024.
Okay.
And it's a new record for the sport. So the sport generated $12 billion in revenue, but keep in mind this. That is only what they define as baseball-related revenue, which is tickets, TV deals, sponsorships at the stadium, that stuff. That doesn't count any of the teams that have their own version of Ballpark Village. Ballpark Village and that type of thing, they don't count towards this because they're considered separate. So what I'm saying is Major League Baseball's doing really well, like really well. It's not the NFL, and that's about the worst thing you can say about Major League Baseball. But we have this dynamic where fans of a certain age, usually they're around my age, a little older, a little younger, but mostly around my age, that are always complaining about It's not what it used to be. It's not as good as it used to be. The sport is dying, but it's not dying, obviously, when you're the second most, when you're the second highest revenue producing sport in the world.
Was it dying
you're not
a few
dying.
Years ago?
No, but I mean, but people.
That was a perception.
Like, if you went back, I have found these articles, Dave, that people were arguing that baseball was dying in the 1950s. Like, it's becoming this, and kids don't like it anymore. Like, we're always fretting about what kids don't like. Kids grow up. They grow up, and they like different things when they're older than they do when they're 12. And I feel like we do a lot of hand-wringing in baseball that we don't do in other sports. And again, the worst thing you can say about the health of baseball is it's not the NFL. But nothing's the NFL. The NFL is a unicorn. It is the most unique sport because it's physical. You can bet on it very easily. It's an easy commitment because it's once a week. And I think people underestimate the fact that football is very conducive to casual fans being on board. Baseball is not.
How long has the NFL been that?
Oh, it's been this for 30, 40 years. I mean, it's, you know, if you went back to the 60s, then yes, baseball was king. But, you know, back then, boxing was also one of the big three, and horse racing was one of the big three. And those are gone, but baseball is still there. Next to the NFL and the NBA. So baseball and then the NBA, the two of them are about the same when it comes to their revenue producing what they do over the course of a calendar year. But that led me to get a couple of responses on Twitter last night that I thought would be interesting for you guys to hear and you guys to kick around because I find it to be a commentary on how we view the world and how basically everything's better when you're younger, right? So I'm sure, Dave, I mean, we've talked about it a little bit. I don't know how much, Rach and Angela, I don't know how much you guys have paid attention to the complaints about baseball being too boring. Not enough's happening, too many strikeouts, the style of play is not exciting, and people aren't into it. And I thought last night when and again, this is a good tweeter that I go back and forth. This is not a fight. I like this person. But we're talking about the perspective, right? So would you agree that a lot of Cardinals fans think 1968, 67, 68 was a pretty great time?
Yes.
Right? It's considered the late 60s part of the golden era, the golden age of Major League Baseball. Well, back then, everything that we talk about now in terms of being a negative, you know, not enough run scoring, not enough action, was worse than it is now. League batting average back then was worse. People obviously hit more home runs now. Would it surprise you to know that teams steal more bases now than they did in the late 60s?
A little bit.
That runs scored are obviously up, but the late 60s were the worst offensive era ever, right? And that's why they changed
rules.
Why
do you think that is?
It was just circumstance. All of the advantages went toward pitchers. The mounds were unlimited in their height. You had pitchers hitting for all of the teams. That's why the DH came into the American League at that time, and they shortened the mound, things like that. So it was just a time where the pitchers had an advantage. Before that, you know, you had eras like in the 1930s where it was a hitter's league and it just kind of cycles through. But, you know, that's true in the past. But when it happens now it's a crisis. Back then, it's just part of the golden days. And this is kind of getting into the idea of we are not remembering things accurately when we're going by how it feels. So if I were to ask you guys, would you guys think that the 1980s, that 1985 was a pretty great time for baseball?
Mm-hmm.
Would you think that everybody was excited about Whitey Ball and obviously mm-hmm. the Cardinals, World Series champions and all of that? If we compared 1985 to now, fewer home runs per team, fewer stolen bases per team in 1985 than in 2024, which nobody would believe. Runs about the same, batting average about the same. So strikeouts are happening more now, which is something people don't like. But I was kind of making the point, like, do you really care if someone strikes out versus grounds out? Like, is that difference to you? Like, the idea that things in the past were so much better is really a fantasy.
I would argue, let me put a wrinkle into it, being my age, that you have two golden times for things like this. Your youth and your middle age. Because
sure.
at 60, I'm way more into the Cardinals, way more than I was at my prime of 45. I was busy when I was 45.
Yeah.
Raising the kids and things like that. Now I can watch every game. And when I was a kid, I could watch every game. But when you're in the middle of your career, in the middle of raising your family, for me at least, I was kind of out on sports.
Right, right. And yes, exactly. And a lot of people are in that. Because you're super busy and there just isn't time. And then when you have time, you kind of come back to it and you're talking, what you're getting what you're talking about.
I feel like
about.
A kid again.
And what's fascinating to me, though, is we all know this, and this is a favorite subject of mine because I'm all about perspective. Like, nothing exists in a vacuum. Nothing just sucks. Nothing is just great. It's all about what's surrounding it, right? So what would you, I would argue the most fun era in baseball in any of our lifetimes was the steroid era. Tons of home runs. Offense was booming. It was exciting. The games were long, which, you know, a lot of people didn't like, but they were action-packed, man. You know, runs left and right. And what's fascinating to me, though, is nobody thinks of that as a golden era. And I get it, because we know why it happened that way. We know that a lot of people were cheating, and that ever since we cracked down on that cheating, it's gone back to being a little bit more normal. But then when you break this down on a per-game basis, so when people say things like, or when people talk about things like style of play, you know, not enough balls in play in modern baseball now, too many strikeouts, it's really only like four more strikeouts a game. Is that really changing that much for you?
Not me.
Right? I mean, would four more ground balls make your experience that much more enjoyable?
Can I ask you a question about the steroid era?
Yeah, yeah.
Not the company line. Not what Major League Baseball said, but what you think. Do you think that the prohibition on performance-enhancing drugs was and still is for the protection of the players, truly to keep an unfair advantage or just not to besmirch the league? Because it was a lot of fun when these guys are hitting 500-foot home runs.
Yeah, I think it's a combination. Like, no other sport reveres its record book like baseball does. And I think that's a really big deal to a lot of fans and to a lot of people that cover the sport, which is why that energy was driven, right? You notice all the people everybody was angry at, they're all the hitters. Nobody's angry at all the pitchers that cheated too. I mean, they all cheated just as much and got just as much advantage from doing it. Mm-hmm. Why do you think all of the pitchers back then were good until they were 45? Mm. Guys like, I mean, again, I'm not saying any of these guys cheated, but Roger Clemens we know did, right? But there are a lot of other guys too, and I won't even mention names because I don't think it's fair because they've never been, you know, accused of anything. But there are plenty of other guys, and you can look them up. Guys that were in their 40s and, you know, 43, 44, 45 years old, still throwing 96 miles an hour, which doesn't happen now in an era where guys throw harder. Of course, they're all injured by then now. Mm-hmm. Their arms are all broken by then now. But baseball is very protective of those things like records. But I also think that, yes, there was some good in that because there are a lot of guys that don't want to take the risks with their body by taking those things. And it is an unfair advantage to, and in fact, I forget, oh no, we were talking about it, I think maybe even here on the air with Ranj, where we're making the point like, yeah, those guys don't need to apologize. And I agree, they don't need to apologize to fans. They don't need to apologize over records or anything. Maybe to some of their fellow players who did it the clean way, you maybe apologize for taking opportunities from them.
I wonder if the clean guys from that era regret being clean.
I don't know if they regret being clean. I hope they regret being silent, because that was always one of my big complaints at the time. Is like, if you're clean, you should be speaking up because they're taking from you. Your teammates are, but the problem is nobody wants to rock the boat within the clubhouse. All right, well, our team's good. I don't want to mess that up. I don't want to be that guy. Well, if nobody's going to police it, then you're going to keep getting ripped off. You know, I mean, there are plenty of players who, now, we don't, the guys we think of, Bonds, McGuire, they didn't cost anybody else a career. They didn't cost anybody else a major league job. They were stars already. They were going to be that. But there are a lot of guys that had careers as part-time players, as bench players, or as fringe guys that came out of nowhere and all of a sudden they're good. When they hadn't been before, who, you know, they got good real fast overnight for a pretty good reason, who did take opportunities from other guys that could have had those careers. And that was, you know, to me, that was always the greatest injustice. The record book is one thing, that's separate. But when you're literally taking jobs from other guys who could have, if given a level playing field, could have been better than you, I think there's something bad about that.
Very good. Quick. I love it. Hit semisonic. Welcome back, guys. DGS 323 coming up at 4 p.m. We have former Cardinal Bob Tewksbury, friend of the show. That'll be a lot of fun. You know what I think I want to do? I think I want to teach college.
Oh, yeah.
I do.
Very nice.
Yeah, teach communications 101 or people in the radio field. I mean, I've been doing it 25 years. I have a law degree from WashU. I think I could get hired at SIU or SLU or something like that. Would I fit in teaching you guys when you were at Lewis and Clark? Was it that kind of teaching?
I mean, I had great teachers. It was more of like a traditional approach to broadcasting, though.
That's a good point.
You haven't had like such a traditional approach.
No.
And even the way you do the show now, you can't teach other people to do. You can't teach other people to be Dave Glover because Dave Glover is a very unique personality, which is why you've been so successful over the years. So
that's a good point.
I think you would be great at I took a class called Radio Drama with Al Stevens, who used to work at KMOX.
Oh, yeah.
Al Stevens.
Yeah.
And it was basically like building confidence and doing skits and stuff. I think you would be perfect for something like that.
I am sort of like a major league pitcher that throws real fast underhand. Like, don't try to emulate this.
Well, I mean, but the problem is, though, that there's a lesson in that. You know, I mean,
be yourself.
Yeah, like, I don't think a lot of training for radio, TV, podcasting, public speaking, I don't think a lot of that is just like straight up from a textbook form, like, here's how you do this and here's how you do this. It's not about that. It's about essentially finding a voice. How do you want to be it? Who do you want? Like, what are you good at? The best advice I got probably starting in college from a professor who was one of the founding producers at CNN, who basically said, like, don't say I want to be this. You have to figure out what you're good at and what fits you and then be great at that and polish that and fix that up.
That really is one of the best things that happened to me. And thank God my first employers, Joe Rush, John Beck, Rick Bayless over at Emmis, were too afraid to fire me because I was a lawyer. Because the first 6 months were terrible. And they thought it was terrible, more importantly. And then about a year in, we started getting ratings. And then we went number one. And they're like, oh,
well,
genius.
Then.
But it was pretty dire there for a while. But no one taught me anything. No one ever said a word to me. Jeff Allen was my first boss, my boss for 20 years. And he's great. I love him. He's like a big brother to me, but he didn't give me a lot of instruction. It was just sort of like, we're going to throw you in to the rodeo and see if you can ride a bull or not.
Well, I think that's why the show has worked. I mean, some of my earliest memories listening to the show was, I remember someone being like, oh, let's turn on the Dave Glover show because Andrew's playing Halfwits. Well, I don't know what that is. And I tuned in and I'm like, what is going on? And then all these like Anchorman clips are playing and Brack is playing. And again, I had no idea what was going on, but it was so appealing. Like, it was like walking in on a bunch of friends hanging out. And it's like, oh, I kind of want to become a part of this group of friends.
And you did.
Yeah, I did.
That's crazy.
It is pretty crazy.
That's nuts.
Yeah. No, you know, one thing you got, though, that is, even if it was unintentional by your bosses, but is just, it's wise, it's smart. You got time.
Got space.
You got to have time, man. You got to, you have, nothing's going to be like first time jump in, boom, here you go, finished product. Like, you need time to perfect things, to work on things, to find out what you're good at, what you're not good at, what you like, and what people like, more importantly.
Mm-hmm.
But, it's tougher because 30 years ago, that time was more likely to be there. The further you move forward, people are just not giving things the time often enough.
Yeah.
Thankfully, here, that's a great thing, too.
Yes.
Like, that's one thing that's really great about KMOX is they develop. Mm-hmm. I mean, it doesn't matter if it's reporters, producers, on air. There's a reason why so many people have been here for a long time and they're the best around. Because you're given time to develop and become that entity.
Yeah.
Rather than like, well, you're not that now, bye.
Well, if anyone out there wants me to teach college or give presentations, maybe I'd be a better presenter. Come in once a semester.
I think we need to get a title for you, like emeritus. Emeritus Dave Glover.
Yeah, you'd be great like on the advice side. You know what I mean?
I don't know what emeritus means, but it sounds good.
Yeah, it does. Old.
Yeah, I believe it means fully retired.
I think so.
But like
near death.
But you can still like go in and walk around.
Yeah.
When I do my hospice work, I'm like, oh, emeritus. Yes.
He's like, I don't need tenure. Just give me emeritus.
Dancing is a degree.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Like, I dance to every song, but if we were dancing, I would go to the bathroom. That makes sense?
If it was like dance party time.
Right. Like when I play in the band, I'm moving around.
Yeah.
When the song's playing, I'm vibing, I'm dancing. But if we're at a wedding and Beck came on and you're like, let's go dance, I'd be like, I got my period. Like,
how do we dance to Beck? I don't mind Beck, by the way, but I don't know how you dance to that.
Just like that.
Yeah, you just got to bop around.
You just vibe, man. You just groove.
All right, so we vibe.
Go where your
dance.
Body takes you.
All right.
Andrew does the same dance.
Tiny dancer over
yeah,
there.
Yeah, he is. Elton John.
I go where I moved.
Dave, you a dancer?
No, I'm a dancer with my wife.
Oh, that's oh, very
that's
sweet.
And, that's the, and that is truly the only person I can dance with.
Wow.
I know.
That's because you haven't tried dancing with me yet.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, you'll forget all
what
about Janice.
In mind, big boy?
Let me put it this way. Andrew is easy. So
yeah, no kidding.
Fly him out to California.
Professor Glover. I'm trying to wrap my head around that.
Yeah. I would love to have had a guy like me come into a class who is just like a guy, right?
I had that. Doc Rock.
What?
I don't even know what his real name was. It was the evolution of rock and roll, and he just said, call me Doc Rock, and he was the coolest guy ever.
Hey. You really did go to college in the 90s.
Yeah.
You really did.
Yeah. Doc Rock. Best elective I ever took.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Was he the professor?
Yeah.
So you had Doc Rock for the whole semester?
Yes. He was awesome.
And so was he like we're picturing?
Yeah. I mean,
like Johnny Fever?
Kind of like, yeah, he kind of had the like, if you picture the rock stars from the 70s.
Yeah.
That kind of hairstyle, long hair, kind of straight.
Yeah.
And he was cool, man. And we got, I'm not even kidding you, this is highly illegal and frowned upon now, but like, you would get extra credit if you made copies of your new tapes that you got and let him hear them.
That's funny.
That's pretty cool.
So we can maybe find a happy medium between, like, yeah, Harvard yeah. and
Professor Glover and Doc Rock.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe somewhere in the middle you could be.
Yeah.
Students, you can call me Ramjet.
Professor Ramjet.
Professor Ramjet, right, emeritus.
Yeah, emeritus.
I could just see Dave walking in with his beanie on and just say,
I'm not going to lie. I think the kids would like that.
Hi, kids. I'm your new teacher.
Hello, fellow kids.
What, you're like, this is going to be the easiest thing? Class ever.
Yeah, that's right.
We won't be giving out grades.
Do what you dig, man.
Dave will be like, I want a 14-page term paper.
Single-spaced.
And then every one of us as a professor like, I ain't reading all that. You get
that's right.
You get a B.
Yeah, just give everyone a B.
Yeah.
Nobody. How'd you do? I got a B.
Nobody's mad about a B. You'll get those few kids to be like, I get an A on everything, and I need to get an A on this paper. What do I need to do to make it an A?
I'd be like, fine, dork.
Yeah. Well, since you asked, you were right on the borderline. I'll bump it up for you.
Dave, how much of your education, if any, had to do with the on-air part?
None.
So it was just, none at all. You just became a meteorologist?
Right,
and, okay.
Right. Because I knew some guys on TV when I was growing up, I was their weather watcher, would go in and see him from time to time. And they all told me the exact same thing. If you're really into weather, which obviously I was and am, they say, get your degree in atmospheric science or meteorology. If you get into television, that's great. But at the time, you know, it was like one out of 300 get into television. Mm-hmm. So at least you'll be doing what you like to do.
Yeah. So
and that was the advice they gave me.
You obviously had and still have a great career in the media. But if you had not done that, what sort of a meteorological job do you think you might have enjoyed?
I think I would have over time started my own forecasting service and was very close to doing that at one point, continuing to do television and radio, but also start a private weather forecasting company.
So the people would contract with you, take your forecasts, right, and then use them.
Yeah, you know, it ranges. I mean, grocery stores do that service. Oil companies, any company you can, trucking companies.
Yeah. See, I just keep
anything you
media.
Can think of. Yeah, anything you can think of usually wants some kind of weather team on their side. You know, just an example: Walmart has a complete weather office. They forecast for every single store that they have, and that's a lot of forecasting.
Wow. Is that mostly for bad weather or just, hey, it's going to be sunny in Arkansas?
It's mainly for bad weather, but it's also kind of a seasonal thing as mm-hmm. far as buying ahead of time, mm-hmm. To get winter coats in or maybe not get winter coats in.
Mm-hmm. Besides yourself, maybe a name that we would know, who is the best you've ever seen do it?
That's a tough question. My mentor growing up was a guy named Don Kent, who lived in Boston, who did WBZ in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
And I really highly respected him and would not leave for school. He was doing the morning with Jack Chase. Remember Bob Chase?
I remember Bob.
Yeah, Jack was his brother. Hmm. And they were institutions in Boston. And I would not leave for school before they had a 5-minute newscast from 6:55 to 7 o'clock.
Man, you had it bad.
I had to see it. I just had to see it.
Who was your favorite person to work with? It doesn't matter whether they were sports or an anchor. Who did you just really enjoy seeing every evening?
Dick Ford.
Yeah,
Dick Ford would be the guy. He absolutely would be the guy.
Was he just like he was off air as
yes,
he was on air?
Absolutely. He was one of the nicest guys. He had a little bit of a crustiness to him,
yeah,
which I kind of like. And he was... I mean, he didn't whitewash it. It's like, here's what's going on.
Joe Goldberg, who was my sports guy forever, tells a great Dick Ford story that they were in the bathroom at the same time, standing next to each other at a urinal. And Dick Ford looks over to him and he's like, Goldie, what's with all this rap music? Like, isn't that great? Peeing next to Dick Ford, he's asking you about rap music. I grew up with Dick Ford and Chris Condon.
Yep. Chris was great. Max Roby was great.
Max Roby. Gosh. I mean, back then, Dave, you get it. I don't think it's like this anymore. I know it's not like this anymore. We watched the 5 and the 10 with our parents. Like we watched it.
Oh, I don't think kids watch it at all.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so.
What do you think, Andrew? You watching local news?
No, I actually don't really watch it. I don't have TV. I don't have TV. Like, I don't have, like, an antenna or anything, and I only have, like, the streaming services. I don't have cable.
Oh, you don't have one that has the streaming that has the local TV channel?
Mm-hmm. Huh. I don't have, like...
No Hulu or anything like that?
Yeah, none of that kind of stuff. It's all expensive.
The first thing I do when I go home, and I watch the local news, I'll watch... I watch Channel 4 in the morning. I love Matt Chambers. He's my pal. And then if I get home in time, I watch the 5 o'clock on Channel 5. I watch Lester Holt, 6 o'clock Channel 5. Then I switch over to KMOV again. Mornings, the only local after 7 is Fox 2, so I watch them all. And it's cool because I know most of them. I'm not like boys with them like I am with Chambers, but I'm like I know them all. And then at 7, I usually watch the Channel 11. I just love local news.
Yeah, it's comforting.
It is. Yeah, it is. I think that's it. I think that's what it is. How are we looking, Dave?
We're looking great. Mid, upper 50s today. Now, what's going to happen here, we've got a big old slow-moving, wet storm system coming out of the Texas Panhandle. That takes over tonight as far as clouds are concerned. Tomorrow's a cloudy day. We're going to see rain and a couple of non-severe thunderstorms. The focus is going to take the day to develop and move in here, but let's count on it by the afternoon. Still pretty nice, 50 degrees. Same story on Thursday night. Periods of rain, a couple of non-severe storms, 45. So it's definitely rain. Some scattered showers around Friday morning. Otherwise, a mix of clouds and sunshine, 53. The weekend looks great. Sunny skies on Saturday as we start the new month, 52. And Sunday, Groundhog Day, sunny skies, 62. For the high on Sunday, that will be the warmest we've seen since December 16th. And because it will be sunny, the groundhog should see his shadow.
Did you love or hate the Groundhog Day?
Oh, I tolerated it. Mm-hmm. I just tolerated it. You know, it was fun. There's a lot of fun things in weather. That's one of them. It's also the midway point of winter.
It was fun as a kid because I really believed it. Like I really thought like, oh, well, this is science.
He knows something. That
yeah,
groundhog.
He knows something.
He spent the whole winter learning, working on his forecast. He was hibernating and doing work.
Have you guys ever seen Jack Frost?
A million years ago.
For the first time this past Christmas.
Yeah, me too.
Wow.
That's odd.
Well, yeah, I'm just thinking of it because it starts with the groundhog.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Forgot about that.
I haven't seen Groundhog Day in a long time.
I have not seen it.
Ever?
Yeah.
Oh, you should.
Wow.
Yeah. You like it.
I like Bill Murray.
Yeah.
No, then you'd love it.
Yeah.
It's an interesting movie.
But it's very 80s, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
I mean, I'm a child of the 80s, so I'm like, I get 80s. I'm fine with that. But
it's of its time, but I doubt it would be super dated.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you, Dave. Appreciate it.
All right.
DGS on KMOX. Headlines, Rach.
Brought to you by Schnucks. Reward yourself daily with the Schnucks Rewards app. So Donald Trump says that Microsoft is one of the companies eyeing TikTok. They are a top bidder. Other potential buyers include Oracle and YouTube star Mr. Beast.
So I wouldn't think any individual like Mr. Beast would I would think it would be billions. Cost billions.
With Mr. Beast, that's got to be a publicity stunt because I know the guy has money, but I think it's tied up in his YouTube projects all the time, and I don't think it's that much money to be able to buy TikTok.
Well, according to the Wikipedia, he's worth $500 million.
Whew.
So he would just be the name on it. Right, like you guys remember, like this group of guys bought the Marlins, and Derek Jeter's name was on it. Mm. He didn't buy the Marlins; he was just a guy that they used as the face, and the money guys are behind the scenes. Has to be that, right?
Yeah, I would think so.
Malik Obama, the half brother of former President Barack Obama, has issued an apology for the launch of the Obama meme coin, which quickly crashed in value. We've got a Hawk to a Girl situation on our hands where basically he was paid to be the face of this company and it was a pump and dump scheme. And he's saying like, yeah, I'm sorry. I should have looked into this more.
Obama?
Malik Obama.
Oh.
His half brother.
Oh, well, I mean, if you're buying the Malik Obama coin, you get what you get. You don't throw a fit.
So much funnier if it was
for us. Stop buying meme coins.
I got a text halfway through that story and I heard you say Obama. I'm like, Barack Obama has a meme coin? He really is dating Jennifer Aniston.
Why do people fall for these things?
Because they want to get rid. Here's the thing. I don't think it's a matter of like, this is a stable currency that Obama's half-brother is bringing into the world. I think it's they think that they can be on the side of the rug pullers. They want to spend all their money in the hopes that they will be on the wave of getting rid of all the money before it gets pulled. The problem is that's almost impossible to do unless you are the one in control of when it happens.
Yeah.
And so that's why, you know, it's people trying to be, they're getting scammed while trying to scam. They're like, well, I'm going to get it on the scam.
Yeah, no one's investing in this to pay for a college in 20 years. I mean,
they think they're going to be able to scam and get rich quick, and then it doesn't work because you can't out-scam the scammers when they're holding all the cards.
This feels like every Fred Flintstone
scheme.
Like, get-rich-quick scheme. Like, you know what we're going to do, Barney? Like, yeah, we're going to lose our money.
Spirit Airlines is updating their passenger policy. They're banning lewd clothing and tattoos when asked to define lewd or offensive clothing or tattoos. They say this includes see-through clothing, exposed breasts, buttocks, or other private parts. And
you should be able to go completely nude on Spirit Airlines. Just
you guys
worry about flying the plane.
Well, why would passengers have to worry about tattoos?
I think it's just like lewd tattoos, offensive tattoos, so maybe
like curse words or whatever.
Or like a swastika or something that can turn you away.
Hmm.
Interesting.
Who's trying to go on a plane with exposed breasts?
I mean,
but being so judgmental.
You'd be surprised.
I'm just saying. I mean, I've only flown like once, but
you'd be surprised at the people who are like, I got kicked off the flight because they said my outfit was inappropriate. And then you see their outfit and you're like, well, kind of. Mm. I mean, you're kind of forcing someone to sit next to you for the whole thing. Like, you could throw on a t-shirt.
Was anybody dressed crazy on your flights?
No. But there was a really mean guy on my flight from Dallas to St. Louis. He seemed like he flew a lot, but he comes up to this man who was sitting in his seat and he just walks up and goes, you're in my seat and you're going to have to move so I can get in my seat. And I'm like, there's a nicer way to go about this. Like, why did you go from 0 to 100?
How did the guy react?
He was like, oh, I'm so sorry, and moved.
Was he in the guy's seat?
He was in the guy's seat. Mm. Like, he wasn't wrong. But actually, a funny story, when we were at the sumo tournament, these people came up to the people sitting in front of me and they were like, "You're in my seat." And then they weren't. It was the wrong seat.
That's
and
always nice.
Didn't apologize or anything, just turned on their heels and walked away. I'm like, "You are such a jerk." Like,
Americans?
Like, why do people act like that? It was so embarrassing. Anyway, back to headlines. One more. Sundance Film Festival is going online starting tomorrow. This online access has become a beloved component of the festival. It allows audiences to watch films from anywhere in the country. So that's kind of cool if you don't want to make the journey to Sundance. Now, I'm assuming you do have to pay a fee to do this. You're not going to be able to see free movies, but it's just kind of nice.
Where is Sundance?
Park City, Utah.
I was kind of hoping it was more like Cannes or something. You go to the Riviera. I'd go to that. You guys want to go to Cannes next year?
I think it's too rich for my blood.
And we'll get a sponsor.
You're the only one that fit in there.
Why is that?
Well, because you're pretty.
Yeah, you know? They'd be looking at us coming. They're like,
"Yeah,
who let these guys get tickets?"
Yeah. Oh, you done?
Yep.
Sorry.
No more lines.
Bad host.
Yeah.
It's okay.